Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where, of course, we talk about topics related to fundraising and leadership and also management and coaching. My name is David Langiuli.
And I'm Janice Henning. And today we're excited to have a guest with us. We have Nicole Salmon, who's the founder and principal of Boundless Philanthropy and a newly minted chair of her local community health center. So welcome, Nicole.
Thank you. Great to be here, Janice. Great to be with you both today.
Yeah. So before we kick off, we're going to have a great conversation about a blog post you wrote for us. But first, give us in a couple of words, what is Boundless Philanthropy and what services do you offer?
Yes. When before I founded Boundless Philanthropy, I was the director of development at Oxfam Canada, and I was sort of making that transition, trying to decide what was next for me. And ended up getting into the consulting world. And so a range of fundraising services, from developing fundraising strategies. Actually, the biggest part of my consultancy has been interim senior leadership roles. I sort of fell into that, didn't plan it, but I sort of fell into that. And I've had a number of assignments that are along those lines, and I've enjoyed it. It sort of gave me this perfect balance between, striking out on my own, but also staying a little bit connected to organizations. And I do a little bit of mentorship for fundraising, upcoming fundraisers also.
Excellent. Yes. And you were just sharing with us before we hit record that you had some coaching as you were making that transition. And I love how you and I have had several conversations. We were actually introduced by a mutual friend, Nanika Allen, who we actually had on episode 65. So people can go back and listen to that. Yes. But it feels like there's like a beautiful sort of alignment between the work that you do and the work that we do at Fundraising Leadership.
Yeah, I think so. And as I mentioned to you, to both you and David, before we went live, is I'm a real advocate for coaching. It played a huge role in my transition. And what I really liked about it was this sort of comprehensive approach to it, right? So it's not just about, career and direction. It really sort of looked at my life and what was important to me at that point in time. And it was extremely, extremely helpful. And another time I'll tell you the question, that breakthrough question that my coach asked me that I use to this day. It's just an incredible one, and I rely on it every time I have decisions to make. It's really critical. So I'm a real advocate.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, I know in coaching, Janice and I do a lot of work around values, and you wrote a little bit about values and virtues in your blog post. So why don't you share a little bit with us what's on your mind around values and virtues?
Yeah, I would love to. So as Janice mentioned, I've just been elected chair of a community health center. I also sit on another board, Realize Canada, which is an organization working on HIV and rehab, and helping people, how can they live a long life, a healthy life, while having episodic conditions, different episodic conditions. I've also had the benefit, because I was in a senior role in a nonprofit, I was a staff member and I attended board meetings, right? So it's always one of those things where you're looking at, sitting on both sides of the table. I've had that experience as a staff person, I've had that experience now as a board member. And more, you're, especially after the George Floyd incident, I think there's so much attention on values. And I found it really interesting that all these organizations who they didn't actually espouse specific values, but after that incident, you had organizations putting things up on their website, our values are this, we value this. And I thought it was really a curious moment in time. And so there's no organization, you go on their website and you see all these lovely values, right? Accountability, transparency, integrity. And the next thing I sort of said to myself was, well, how is it actually reflected in organizations, right? So I sit on the board side, you hear different things, sitting on the staffing side, you hear different things. And so it was a big question for me. It's important to establish that you do have values, But I think it's even more important that you actually live those values. So when I wrote the blog post, that was key and central to what I wanted to communicate, is that it's not enough to just sort of state a value. You need to ask yourself that next question is, how are those values reflected in the way I behave, in the actions I take, in the decisions I make within my organization? So I think it's taking that next step.
Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I think about times when I've worked places where I really felt I was living the values, particularly within, like, being within a team that talked about them very often, kept them alive, you know, used them to set direction. And then I think about working at times where I couldn't even have articulated the values to you. You know, I would have had to look on the website. So I'm curious, like, you know, when, you know, through your experience and now as a consultant, like, what do you see helps organizations actually make that sort of leap from just having them and having done that as maybe a one-off situation to actually like actionizing them?
Yeah, for me, again, it comes back to asking that question of yourself. So it's not to have, you know, sort of corners where my values are parked there and then I do what I want to do over here. There has to be alignment between what you say and what you actually do. So to me, it's always that question. If I say I have a value of empowerment, if my values are around accountability, how are those values reflected in the decisions I make, the processes within the organizations, right? So, you know, if you have a value of accountability, the way I look at accountability, I like to frame accountability as a sort of reciprocal relationship. So it's not just you're going to say what you do, but understanding that others are relying on you doing your part, and you know, someone else is relying on me doing my part, right? So when you look at something like accountability, how am I making sure that if someone is depending on me, for example, I'm actually meeting those expectations? And if I cannot, then I need to say something. So it's actually living those values, right? Not just sort of saying I'm accountable. It's how is it driving you in terms of how you behave, how you make decisions. I might have a deadline coming up. You know, my manager decides, okay, yeah, that's the deadline. That's when I expect you to have that report in. Well, accountability means that I'm going to meet that. And if I am finding that I won't be able to do that, then I have to take some action prior to that. So you have to have a conversation before that. Have that conversation with your manager saying, okay, I'm having some trouble. I'm not sure I can make that deadline. You know, is there any way we can adjust it? That's how you actually live those values. And I think that's the key. So to me, it's asking that question, if I have these values, how does it align with my behaviors and my actions and my decisions?
Well, it's so interesting that you brought up accountability, because Janice and I actually train teams. We actually do some open enrollment workshops online and in person. We've had for AFP, the Association of Fundraising Professionals. You'd be amazed at how many individuals and their organizations talk about integrity and accountability, and they have no structure for actualizing it the way you shared. So we actually train that. But I wanted to ask you another stated value that you see everywhere now is something called diversity. And I know we're all laughing, right? Because it's one of these things where, what does that mean? And you articulated in the blog post diversity beyond visual cues, basically. And so I love that. And because I think it's so easy for us just to say, well, if we have a certain color palette in our organization, then that means we're diverse. Or if we have a certain gender palette, then we're diverse. So say more about what you had in mind around this beyond visual cues.
So the board that I chair, it's a community health center, and it certainly works the clients that we serve. are people who are in vulnerable states. Some of them are undocumented residents. And so the board is fairly reflective of that community, right? So if you look at the catchment area for the organization, the board is, you know, you look at the board, it's a pretty diverse board. I just got into that role in September. And of course, we're now having these initial conversations around the board table, having discussions. And what struck me, and I shouldn't say it struck me because I sort of knew this before, is yes, you have that diversity, but what I really appreciated in terms of the conversations is the uniqueness and what each person had to bring to the table. And it was it was confirming something that I always believed, was that our diversity is about perspectives. And certainly some of our perspectives are tied to our identities, our experiences. And that became very clear. And I, you know, the first board meeting we had, I walked away from that board meeting smiling, thinking, wow, just the experience, the expertise, the talent. And yeah, we were visually diverse too, but just bringing those things to the table was something that I think is going to serve the organization and serve the clients that we serve even better. And, you know, when I think about it, you know, let me sort of turn it to myself. So I'm a Black woman, and everyone can sort of visually, they can see that. That's how I identify. But I'm more than that. I was born in Jamaica, grew up, you know, some of my formative years were there. A part of my teenage years was there. I made a seamless transition to Canada, continued my schooling here. I ended up working, at one point I thought I was going to be an accountant, and I ended up in the nonprofit space quite accidentally. I'm from a large family, and I'm the youngest in the family, right? So I'm an aunt, right? I've done mothering. I haven't given birth to children, but I'm an aunt, and I take that role very seriously. So I bring all of that to the table when I walk into any room. And I think that is important, right? I'm a gardener. I love to read. But what happens is people don't see those things, so they don't accept that as part of what I bring to the table. And I think the point I wanted to make in the blog is to understand that we are all unique. We are all made up of all our experiences. And that is of value beyond a visual cue. So that was the key.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. Like, I was listening to a very good friend that David and I both know from our leadership program we did together, was a guest on a podcast the other day. And I was listening, and I was so struck because, you know, I've heard many parts of his story. And in this 40-minute conversation, there was like so many more layers to his story that I hadn't heard before. And I think that's something it feels like we're just starting as organizations to make space for, is like actually like having the curiosity and space and time to listen to each other's stories, so we know the different perspectives people can bring to the table, which we can't, like, you know, like you said, some of which we can guess or see or imagine or make assumptions about, but most of it we can't. It's all hidden, you know, behind.
Right. And the key is to recognize that, right? So we are all made up of various layers. And, you know, as you build a relationship, some of those layers get revealed a little bit more. But I think it was really important, you know, so it's sort of consistent to what I said about living your, you know, making sure your values, you're living those values, it becomes, your values become virtues. It's the same sort of thing approach when you look at diversity. It's, you know, your experiences are part of what you bring to the table, in addition to whatever perspectives you may have. It forms your perspectives, actually. And it's, you know, I've spent 2/3 of my life here in Canada. I'm a Canadian citizen. And so I bring that to the table. And there's value in that. It's part of my contribution to my community. It's part of my contribution to the country.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. We do a lot of work with teams, mostly leadership teams in the nonprofit world, and around the topics of building trust, like laying in a foundation of trust and having candid conversations. And so, and also being able to navigate through conflict. So all of what you're saying is, you know, having the diversity of thought and opinion can create conflict. And it's so important to have that, and I hope you're experiencing that on the board you serve, the foundation of trust where people can share more and more, where they tend to share more than withhold. It takes courage. That's actually one of the cardinal ancient virtues, courage. It actually takes courage to share. Share like you did with us just now on the podcast, share your background beyond, I'm a Black woman, and just more of your story, because that creates intimacy, that creates trust. So I love where you're pointing the audience, Nicole.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Nicole, I know you're not too far into your role as chair, but what have you seen so far on your own board, and where do you hope to take that during your term as chair in terms of, creating your values into virtues, I guess is how we would think about it.
Right. So I serve on two boards, and so the experience is certainly going to be similar in some ways, but of course, moving into the role of board. And as I said, a board chair, and as I sort of said, is for me, the main thing is making sure that we're serving our clients in the way we actually say we are, right? So it's, again, reconciling the idea of this is what we do and making sure that everything internally aligns to that. So for me, the vision is, certainly encouraging and working with the board and working with staff and working with community members to ensure that we're providing the very best service, high quality care, accessible care. And of course, with COVID, it's interesting. We went through this strategic planning process about a couple of years ago, and I was actually chair of the strategic planning committee. And we identified certain strategic directions, right? And a lot of times you go, oh my goodness, let's look at COVID. And one of the things we actually identified was high quality, accessible care. Now, 2 years ago, we might have had a vision of what that would look like. Okay, yeah, this is what we wanted to make sure. COVID happens. It doesn't say that, okay, now we have to change our strategic directions. How has COVID informed us, and what changes can we make moving forward? So for me is, that thing about making sure the strategic plan is a living, breathing, it's not a document, it's how you operate going forward. So now for us is, how does COVID change our thinking? Are we going to use different tactics? Not the strategy is supposed to be going to be the same, the strategic direction is going to be the same, but how do we now make that shift? And I think for me as the chair of the board, looking at those strategic directions and with other board members and with staff, we're always going to do that check-in. It's allowing us that opportunity to put that into action, to make sure that our strategic plan, we're always revisiting it and making sure we're always keeping informed. How are things changing it? And that checkpoint. So I think that is going to be my biggest focus is to make sure that happens. And when you have people with all their expertise, all the volunteers that we have, all the board members we have, I have seen it already that it's going to make a difference. And it's going to make a difference because I've witnessed the questions that are coming, right? Mm-hmm. So these are things, I have a broad experience. I've been in the nonprofit sector a long time, right? I've sat on the side where I'm a staff member sitting at board meetings, and I've been a board member now for several years. But new people came on board and they were asking a different question. And I went, wow, that's fantastic, right? So I think that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for really making sure we keep informed, keep on top of things, bringing those perspective in, because I realize it adds to the richness of what we do. And it makes the outcome for our clients even better, right? So yeah, that's the key.
Well, it sounds to me like all of what you just shared lives in the land of a value you have and a commitment you have to learning that you mentioned in your article, and I'm looking at the office where you are now, and I see all these books behind you. So you have a huge commitment to learning, and I'm curious how that's translate and just in your story around COVID, it sounds like that's the perspective you're taking around, you know, how the organization where you serve as chair is shifting to deal with it, having a learning organization. So what would you want to share? And of course, Janice and I, this is the land we live in all the time. So we're kind of curious how you would articulate this as a board chair, like to your organization.
I think it has to do, that's really an interesting question. I think, you know, we're all on a journey, and that's what I feel like, right? I really do embrace that idea that we're on a journey. And I've always been this sort of curious person. And for you to be curious, I think you also have to be open, right? And again, coming back to that thing about my identity and who I am, you know, I was the youngest in a family of 7 kids. They were all fairly older than I was. I had that front seat to sort of see different perspective, different siblings, all of those things. So I think it's sort of in my DNA to hear different aspects of a story, different ideas, that sort of thing. And so for me, you know, learning is key to making things better. It's part of who I am. It's part of what I do. It feels so much like second nature to me. I can't think, and I'm curious, right? So you see all these books behind me. I also am a book reviewer for the charity report. So, you know, I always feel that there's something more to learn. I always feel that we can grow if we open ourselves to it. So that sense of openness, curiosity, I think is certainly key to leading in any organization, even leading as a board chair, whether or not I'm a board chair, I'm a senior manager, it doesn't really matter. And David, you talk about trust, and trust does not necessarily mean that everything is going to be smooth. Right? Everything, you know, there are going to be times where you're going to have these difficult conversations. Trust is making sure the space is there for people to share those perspectives, whether or not you agree with them or not. And to hold that trust is really critical moving forward as a leader, right? Mm-hmm. So it's that openness, that courage to have difficult conversations, but knowing that the other party is actually looking at it in a similar way. There's that openness, there's that dialogue, there's that space where you can be vulnerable without feeling that there's going to be some sort of retribution, right? Okay. Because of that. So it's key.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, and it feels like a perfect time to bring up your book that's coming out soon, Nicole. So, you know, in terms of, I feel like your values are speaking loud and clear, like around curiosity and openness and learning. And so one of the exciting things that you have coming out in November is a book that you have co-edited. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So this is, you know, I think I wear a perpetual smile about this initiative and this book. So I'm co-editor, one of 3 co-editors with Anika Allen and Camilla Pereira. And the way this book came together, you know, I look at it as 2 pathways sort of coming and converging. So there was this initiative called Our Right to Heal that we did with AFP Global. And it was actually, and it was a collection of stories of different fundraisers, Canadian voices. And it was supposed to originally be published fairly early in the year. And for whatever reason, it kept getting delayed. And when that came out, when it finally got published, it was about a week prior to the George Floyd incident, right? So that happened. At the same time, Gail Pico is someone who I've actually known for many, many, many years. And we had invited, I'm part of this Canadian Black Fundraisers Collective, and we do book reviews. And the book that we had reviewed was one Gail wrote, Cap in Hand. So we had invited Gail back in December to do this review and to be part of this. And she sort of floated this idea about, you know, she was thinking about something, you know, being Black and fundraising and all of that in fundraising. And so that happened, that conversation happened, the George Floyd incident happened. And then in June, we started having a conversation. I was able to connect with Anika and Camilla, and the three of us had that first conversation with Gail. I think what is important about collecting courage, joy, pain, freedom, love, is that it's narratives from Black fundraisers, their experiences. And what we have 9 Canadian fundraisers and we have 5 American. And it's their experiences being part of this charitable sector. And I think what is important about this book, it's supposed to be 3 things that are important about this book. One is when you listen to the experiences, when you read the experiences that have been shared, you begin to sort of question this idea about the inherent goodness of the charitable sector, right? There's no denying that good work is being done by the sector, but the story doesn't end there. So it comes back to that whole idea about values. How mm-hmm. do you live your values? So internally, what is happening? What are the experiences of Black fundraisers within the sector? And so you're going to get a chance to read that. The second part is it's our voices. It's first person narratives. It's our voices. So it's hard to deny that, you know, these experiences, people are not having these experiences. That's important. So it's validating that these things are actually happening and it's not an isolated case. I think the second part of that too is making sure we document, right? So that's why it's collecting courage. Documenting what is happening is also key to being able to address some of these things, right? If it doesn't happen, if we're silent about it, if no one comes forward, if no one is courageous to put this forward, then, you know, things will continue as they are. And I think what we're saying is the time is now, that things have to be different. So we are quite excited about the book. It comes out on November 23rd. It's actually available for pre-sale now. And we're excited for people to hear these stories of joy, pain, freedom, and love, right? That's what we're all made up of, that, right? It's not all pain all the time or joy all the time. It's all that combination. And I think you're gonna find that it's reflected in this book.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wonderful. And we will put a link. It is available for pre-order. So we'll put those links in. And I feel very grateful because it was actually seeing the work that you and Anika are doing that connected me to her, and then she connected us to you because she is the most connector of all time.
Yes,
I haven't known her very long, but she sort of connected me to so many people. So
yes,
I want to give a great appreciation for Anika in bringing us together here to have this conversation. So as we start to wrap up, as you know, Nicole, we'd love to get our listeners into action. So let's give them something really good that they can take away and put into practice here from our conversation.
So, okay, so I'm going to share something that my coach, the question I mentioned at the top, that my coach asked me a question when I started working with her. And I have to mention my coach, her name is Jennifer Parr. I knew her from Ottawa, right? So just an incredible person. And as I was talking to her about making this transition, she said to me, all she said to me, and I had all these things, right? I don't know what is going to happen. I want to do this. And she said to me, simply, what is it that you don't want to regret? And in all the noise that was happening in my head, that provided such clarity for me to take that forward and make decisions, right? So I think that was key for me. So what I'd like to leave with the audience is this idea of taking our values and turning them into virtues. Let's go that next step. It's important to have values, but if you don't live your values, then you're losing something, you're missing something. So the question I have for folks is, when you say you have a particular value, think about how is that value reflected in the way you behave.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate all the great insights and encourage the audience to check out the links. They'll be in the show notes. And remind everyone that you can find the Fundraising Leadership Podcast on Spotify and iTunes and Google Podcasts. And please do rate and review this podcast if you found it useful. That really helps us keep this going. And with that, we'll say arrivederci for now and go put it into practice. Yeah.